Welcome back to Offworld, the show where we talk about all things space exploration and pop culture. I'm Ariel Waldman.
And I'm Norm Chan. And Ariel, the movie we're going to talk about today just hit its 10th anniversary.
Yeah, we are talking about the movie Moon, which is like a really cool movie by Duncan Jones. And it features actually going to the moon and mining it for its resources and what it would be like to actually live out on an outpost on the moon.
It's one of those near future, quote unquote, realistic space exploration stories that tackles a lot of big ideas. One of its big ideas is a spoiler, but it's been 10 years, so we're going to talk about it. It is cloning, which is going to be our big topic today.
Yeah, let's take a listen. Okay, so we are talking about the movie Moon, which came out in 2009. So it's been 10 years since this movie came out. Really fascinating movie about clones and mining helium-3 on the moon and everything. And today we have a really awesome guest. Hank, please go ahead and introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about what you do.
Sure. My name's Hank Greeley. I'm a law professor at Stanford. I direct the Stanford Center for Law and the Biosciences. For the last quarter of a century or so, my work has focused on ethical, legal, and social implications of advances in the biosciences, genetics, neuroscience, stem cell research, cloning, de-extinction, assisted reproduction, any bright, shiny object that catches my eye.
So I guess it would not be a stretch to say that what's depicted in this film and what happens would be under this kind of purview and also would not be something that you would approve of.
Well, I'd say more accurately, what's depicted in this film would be science fiction rather than science. And I try to write things that aren't, I read a lot of science fiction, but I try not to write science fiction. But if you could do this, it would be within the sort of thing I worry about, and it wouldn't be something I approve of.
Yeah, well, I mean,
enslaving people, bad thing.
Yeah, not so great. I mean, to catch sort of our audience up on this, because, you know, I'm not an expert in cloning, and a lot of people I don't think are. What is the current state of cloning? Like, what has been done? What hasn't been done?
So that's so interesting. Everybody remembers Dolly the sheep, or those of you who are too young, because she was born 23 years ago, have heard about Dolly the sheep, named after Dolly Parton. This was the first adult mammal. No, this was the first mammal cloned from cells of an adult mammal. They'd been cloned frogs 20 years earlier, actually the year before Dolly was born. The same team cloned two sheep from embryonic cells of sheep. Nobody paid any attention to
it. That's like making twins.
Right. But somehow Dolly caught everybody's attention, in part because people had concluded it couldn't be done. And people got terrified. There was mass hysteria about armies of cloned warrior slaves. I'm actually not making that up. People were worried about armies of cloned warrior slaves. The movie Boys from Brazil with lots of cloned little Hitlers didn't help things at all. Yeah. And so lots of places passed laws against human cloning, including California, whose law is still in place. Many countries, many states banned human cloning. Many odd people said they were going to clone people. There was a guy named Richard Seed, great last name, was a physicist. He kind of looked like Doc Brown from Back to the Future. He was going to clone himself. There were a couple of obstetricians who had pregnancies going, and the best was this group called the Raëlians, a religious sect headquartered in Quebec. A French-speaking race driver was visited by aliens who told him his name was now Raël. And he had to hang out with a lot of beautiful young women. I think it's kind of a sex cult.
Yeah.
After Dolly was born, the aliens came back and told Raël that it was his religious duty to clone people.
Oh, my God.
So the Raëlians trotted out an attractive young woman, a PhD in biochemistry, Brigitte Boiselier, who was going to be their chief cloner because biochemistry and, you know, cloning, OBGYNs, same thing,
sure.
Basically. It's science, right? And they announced that on December 25th of 2000, they had successfully cloned the first human, a girl named Eve. Unfortunately, they've never allowed anybody to inspect Eve or check her DNA because that would invade her privacy. So a lot of people—
dubious at best.
Yeah, beyond dubious. Right? They're still around, the Raëlians. So all these people say they're going to do it. Nobody succeeds. there's a guy named Wong Woo-suk who becomes a hero in South Korea. His face is on a postage stamp in South Korea because he said he had become the first person successfully to clone human embryos. Didn't take them to babies, just embryos in a dish. And, you know, he said part of it was he had Korean technicians, and Koreans were much better at the details of this because they used metal chopsticks instead of wooden chopsticks or plastic chopsticks, and that gave them better dexterity. Ends up on a postage stamp, ends up almost in prison because it turns out he made it all up. He was convicted of various crimes and disgraced. So people conclude you can't clone humans. We don't know why, but reproduction's weird. Then in 2013, a scientist in Oregon named Shukrat Matalapov clones human embryos. The secret sauce turned out to be adding to the culture medium where the cells are growing, caffeine. So be careful at Starbucks.
Yeah.
Other groups have replicated this. It's now clear that you can clone human embryos.
From adult humans.
From skin cells. Well, what you need two things. So to back up a little bit, how was Dolly born? How was Dolly created? They took an egg from one sheep. They took the nucleus out of the egg. The nucleus of a cell, the nucleus of an egg or any cell, is where almost all of your DNA is. In humans, it's 46 chromosomes. It's 6.4 billion letters of DNA. It's all in the nucleus. They took the nucleus out of the egg. And then they took a skin cell that had been frozen from a sheep that actually had been dead for 3 years. It wasn't just a skin cell. It was a mammary tissue cell, which is why they named the clone after Dolly Parton, because of the mammary tissue.
I did not know that story.
Dolly Parton is actually a wonderful songwriter, great singer with a great sense of humor. She thought it was a kick.
Yeah.
She thought it was so funny. So they take that mammary cell, but normally now for cloning you use skin cells. It's tiny compared to the egg. The egg is a basketball. This thing is a grape, right? They fuse the two together. The mammary tissue cell or the skin cell has its own nucleus with 46 chromosomes and all the stuff. And then they gave them electric shocks. They did this with 230, 280 sheep eggs, and they got one sheep. They got a couple of pregnancies started, but only one came to term. If you're going to do that with humans, right now you need a human woman's egg. That's part of the reason it's done in Oregon, because Oregon allows people to buy eggs for research purposes, which many places like California doesn't. Donating sperm is cheap, easy, not difficult, not risky. Donating eggs, egg harvest is unpleasant, expensive, and even a little bit risky. So eggs are the limiting factor. You get an egg, human egg, take the nucleus out. So we could take an egg from you, take the nucleus out of it, take a skin cell from Norman, fuse the two together, and give it a little shock, and if everything works, you've got an embryo growing that is genetically almost exactly Norman. Not quite, because outside the nucleus in the goo of the cells, the cytoplasm, there are these little things called mitochondria. If you ever had high school biology, you will remember these are the energy powerhouses of the cell, and they look like kidney beans.
Power plants, yeah.
Yep. And they've got their own DNA. They got 16,000 bases compared to 6.4 billion, so they don't have much. But the clone will be all Norman except for the mitochondria, which will be you. Then if we put the embryo in a woman and everything goes right, you get a baby Norman, except it's not wearing glasses, doesn't have that haircut. It's a baby, not interviewing anybody. It's a baby who knows, it has none of Norman's memories or personality or anything. Nobody, as far as we know, has done that with humans. It's illegal in most places. It would be criminally reckless, at least now, because we're not really successful at it. When you clone large animals, and there's actually been a lot of cattle and horse cloning going on. The world's champion polo team is cloned polo ponies. But, you know, you get 5, 10, 15% disabilities, stillbirths, et cetera, which if you're doing horses might be acceptable, but if you're doing babies, it's not.
Yeah.
So that's the current state of affairs.
I feel like I've been like transported to a much more knowledgeable place. Thank you for that. That was great. I mean, you talked about like, you know, he doesn't have, like a clone wouldn't have memories or anything. Obviously.
A clone would be a baby.
But do we know enough to know if people would have the same neurological sort of deposition, like the basis? Like obviously experiences are different, but how much is the brain itself?
We kind of know this in two ways. One is by studies of people's personalities and to see how similar people who are genetically closer to each other are more likely to have similar personalities. So there are some genetic associations with things like extroversion or shyness or, you know, some sports abilities or maybe math ability. They're not very strong. Our best test is there are clones among us. Close to 1% of the 7.5 billion people in the world are clones because identical twins are clones. You guys know any identical twins? Ever known identical twins?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Were they the same person?
No, absolutely not.
Yeah. So at Stanford, we've had two sets of twin star basketball players. All four of them so good, they all played in the NBA. The Collins brothers and the Lopez brothers. At Stanford, they're big men. They're all over 7 feet. But in both cases, one of the twins liked to go to the hoop. The other twin liked the turnaround jump shot. They were not the same players. They majored in different things. They liked different things. And in fact, one of the Collins brothers was the first major U.S. athlete to come out as gay while he was still in a professional sport. The other one says he loves his brother, but he's not like his brother that way. So even something as fundamental as sexual orientation, twins are different. So that's our best test. Identical twins are genetically even a little bit more identical than the clone Norman would be because they've got the same mitochondria as well as all the same nuclear DNA.
Got it.
And they're not the same person.
I mean, it goes to the question of why these science fiction stories and these specifically space exploration stories would use this idea, use this trope. And like we understand that, you know, as depicted in a film like Moon, you know, the two clones have the same memories. And so you get this dramatic crisis of identity and introspection. And that makes for good storytelling. But from a purely practical standpoint, is there any practical reason to have cloned workers for space exploration or space flight?
So they're going to be the same size. You could, you know, they could wear hand-me-downs. You don't need different size spacesuits.
Okay.
Well, actually,
you could CRISPR people
right? Actually, yeah. But I say that, but in fact, I had a identical twin student, and I met his, I had him wanted very eager to have me meet his identical twin brother at graduation. The brother's like 4 inches taller and 40 pounds heavier. And my student said, yeah, I was the twin, and this is apparently not all that uncommon with twins. I was the one that got less nutrition in the womb. So I was kind of the runt. I was the stunted twin. So even identical twins aren't necessarily the same size. There's no good reason to want to use clones other than it's great for stories. And, you know, stories about twins, Shakespeare's A Comedy of Errors, that's about pairs of twins because twins make for good confusion for humorous purposes or dramatic purposes. And Shakespeare stole that story from a Roman playwright named Plautus. So 2,000 years ago, people are making plays basically about clones. They were identical twins, but it just opens up a lot of identity confusion, which you can play for laughs or you can play straight. There's a famous I Love Lucy episode from even when I was just little, well before you guys were born. And it's a famous shtick where there's an open doorway, but there's somebody dressed the same on the other side and they're looking like their mirror. You pretend it's a mirror. And so they're mirroring each other. That again, that's sort of that identity confusion we find both dramatically and humorously powerful.
I almost feels like for a story to be more believable, if it was to go with the model of Moon, you wouldn't want to clone the nature. You would want to clone the nurture, right? Raise them the same way.
Maybe. I mean, but we also have space movies like Gattaca, which are not so much about clones, but about, you know, selective
the eugenics problem. Right.
And then that gets into the CRISPR stuff.
But of course, Gattaca kind of defeats its society's own purpose because the invalid or invalid turns out to be the one who passes all the tests and goes. Mm-hmm. And it was the genetically selected guy who commits the murders.
Yeah. I mean, to me, some of the other things that are often explored in these space cloning scenarios are obviously the insertion of corporations and exploitation and things of that nature. You know, you talked a little bit about people claiming that they had done cloning and clearly had not. But how much are we at a point at all where we have to worry about cloning getting into the wrong hands, be that a corporation or a cult or a, is that something we actually have to worry
about?
I'm
not worried very much about cloning. With all due respect to Norman, who I'm sure is a wonderful human being, there's not much reason to clone Norman.
No.
Who would want a clone? Somebody who was really egotistical, megalomaniacal, had a lot of money. I can't think of anybody in the United States who would be like that and has orange hair. Who really wants a clone? And what you – in these scenarios, leaving aside the identity confusions that cloning can bring, if you were a corporation, basically you want slaves. You want well-trained slaves. You want to be able to bring them up in exactly – the model that you want them to follow, have them have the right skills, the right loyalty, or so on. You probably don't want parents interfering and confusing them. You want to bring them up in a very highly regulated environment. You don't even need gene editing for that. You just need orphans.
Yeah. Well, and white supremacy usually. There's so many like just icky factors to all of this. Like, are there any scenario, like thinking on the science fiction level, are there any scenarios in which there can be positive storytelling about cloning in science fiction? Is there, or is it really just like people just want slaves and it's sort of a way for
or body parts?
The closer to realistic science fiction on this is the body parts part. Because, yeah, there is a reason Norman might want to clone Norman, because if Norman needs a new liver, cloned Norman's liver is going to be welcomed home by real Normans or the first Normans, Norman One's immune system. So there have been some good movies and some good books on that theme. Fortunately, and actually there's a wonderful science fiction series, my favorite current, by somebody who's won 4 Hugos, though she doesn't get the publicity for it, Lois McMaster Bujold. It's won as many Hugos for best novel as anybody and is tied with Robert Heinlein for the top. She has a clone in hers, and in her world, in her, this is the Vorkosigan series, there are people who are cloning bodies to be used for brain transplants or head transplants. So rich old people want a nice young body. They grow them up to be about 18. Why do you wait to 18? I guess because then the old person has an adult-ish body, and they take out the clone's brain and put in the other person's brain. Brain transplants, not anytime soon, maybe never, really complicated. But that's sort of the most extreme example I can think of as the replacement. And there it's not really the replacement organ. It's a replacement body for the crucial organ.
Brain. A really good science fiction film that came out recently dealt with that. I'm going to blank on it. But it dealt with that whole thing of like luring a young man.
Yes, so the Ryan Reynolds, Ben Kingsley one. Maybe one of those.
Yeah.
It's another common trope,
yeah,
right?
It feeds
into, you know, society's kind of fears about death and legacy, and it's an easy thing to, I mean, going back to—
And exploitation.
Exploitation, right.
Yeah, well, and I think this is like getting to some, you know, ickier sort of realities of that people are worried about with space exploration of like, is space exploration when done by corporations just inherently going to be exploitation, you know, off the charts because they can get away with stuff that they can't get away with on Earth or something like that?
You guys may live long enough to have to worry about that. I don't think it's going to be a real problem for my lifetime.
Yeah, I mean, certainly.
I know Elon would like it to be, but.
Yeah, I mean, the question of, you know, how much do we build infrastructure around humans going into space versus how much do we make the humans the infrastructure themselves has been a question.
So, right, there's another set of stories. Actually, going back to the 60s, there was, which one was it? A famous scientist suggested we would do cloning and genetic engineering to make astronauts who would fit better. And if you were going out on a really long-term, maybe lifetime mission, you didn't necessarily need legs. You could be really short, you'd be really light, you'd fit in the capsule well, and we could engineer the astronauts to fit the capsules. Again, this Lois McMaster-Bujold has a couple of books with a species with a human group called Quaddies, who are engineered for zero gravity. So instead of arms and legs, they had four arms. They had arms instead of their legs, so they could grab things. They didn't need to walk. And she does a really good job talking through that idea. Her hook there is somebody invents an artificial gravity, and so suddenly these 400 people are technologically obsolete, and the company wants to get rid of all of them.
Yeah, that feels like I could see that in The Expanse or something.
The good guys, don't worry, the good guys win. It's called Falling Free. It's a really good book.
I mean, so there's also the idea of using cloning as a way to spur population growth. Like in science fiction stories like Interstellar at the very end, Anne Hathaway has to basically be the mother for the human society in some other offworld with all these other embryos, right? And then also in the book Seven Eves, right? It's these seven women who then are cloned to repopulate the human race.
Well, cloned? There is some sperm. There's some leftover sperm from the guys who lasted long enough to give sperm samples. The odd thing about all that, I think one could tell a plausible story about space exploration involving frozen embryos. But they don't have to be clones. Frozen embryos, this will sound crass, but basically they're a dime a dozen in the sense that there are hundreds of thousands of frozen embryos in the U.S. left over from IVF. Nobody knows what to do with them. Nobody wants to destroy them because they'd get you bad publicity or maybe get you sent to hell or for whatever reason, get you sent to prison in Louisiana. Embryos, tanks of frozen embryos were rescued during Katrina because the clinics were worried they would be charged with all sorts of terrible stuff under Louisiana law. But freezing embryos and sending them into space, if you're either sending reproductive age women or 50, 70 years out, an artificial womb, an artificial uterus, it's a lot cheaper. Embryos are a lot smaller than people. Now, the question is, what do you do when those embryos turn into, say, 100 little babies? Who's going to take care of all the babies? But at least it's a cheaper, easier way to get potential future humans out there. But, you know, going back to Seven Eves, which I really enjoyed up to the last part, which got too implausible for me. I wrote a book published in 2016 called The End of Sex and the Future of Human Reproduction. And it's based on the ideas that we'll be able to do whole genome sequencing really cheap. Currently, it's about $5,000 to $10,000 to get a clinically good one. But if it gets cheaper, we'll combine that with making embryos. And so if you two wanted to have babies, you'd go to a clinic. You'd give sperm probably the old-fashioned way. Instead of us trying to harvest 100 eggs from you, which would almost certainly be impossible and certainly be very unpleasant, expensive, and difficult, we'd take a skin cell of yours. We'd turn it into what are called induced pluripotent stem cells. We would make those into egg cells. And then we'd mix your sperm with her eggs. You make egg cells this way. How many egg cells do you get? How many do you want? It's a cell line.
Wow.
Hundreds, thousands, millions, potentially billions. So if you've got people, even if they're not reproductive age, as long as you've got a potential uterus or artificial uterus, you can make eggs and sperm. And this has already worked in mice. People are working on it in humans. A twist that makes this even weirder, nobody's working on this in mice. But when it gets closer in humans, I suspect someone will work on taking Norman skin cells and making them into not just sperm, but into eggs, taking your skin cells and making them not just into eggs, but into sperm. If we did that, you could have one person and a uterus could have lots and lots of kids with no other person needed. In space exploration, that could have advantages.
Yeah. Wow.
Could have disadvantages too, because you're restricting the genetic diversity. But if you want to get far enough in the future, you could use CRISPR to add genetic diversity back in. I've got friends who are actually trying to use CRISPR and cloning to add genetic diversity into an endangered species, the black-footed ferret. Stuart Brand and Ryan Phelan with the Long Now Foundation and Revive and Restore are trying to combine CRISPR and cloning to add genetic diversity. So there's so much that you could really, so much mind-blowing stuff that's feasible that you could do with science fiction. It kind of annoys me when instead you have these pop out, all the memories, you know.
Yeah, right.
The stuff that's not feasible takes over the stories.
And it really sounds like before has any could have any potential impact on something like space exploration, there's so much more impact it could have on society here in terms of just people wanting to have babies.
Right. People who can't have babies because the guy had mumps as a kid and was infertile, or the woman had thyroid cancer and her eggs were all blasted out, or she's 50 and she doesn't have any eggs left. Well, she's got skin cells left.
Yeah.
There's some weirdnesses there. You could, in theory, make eggs and sperm from an 80-year-old, from an 8-year-old, from a fetus that was aborted at 28 weeks, from somebody who's been dead for 8 years but whose cells were carefully frozen. Remember, Dolly was made from frozen cells. So there's all sorts of great, weird science fiction possibilities here that are plausible.
Yeah. Well, I feel like this conversation started as me being really down on like, oh man, cloning and space and sci-fi doesn't make any sense. We shouldn't use it at all. But now you've brought me full circle, because now it sounds like there's so many exciting possibilities if people look a little bit more creatively into what you can currently do. And so this was a fantastic conversation, and thank you so much for being on the show today.
Oh, my pleasure. I like to talk, and this is good stuff.
And maybe people who are aspiring screenwriters should get in touch and get ideas from you their stories.
Give me story credit and 1%, but of the gross, not of the net. Always take the gross.
Noted.
Thanks so much.
Sure, my pleasure.
Okay, well, I really loved that conversation because I don't really know anything about cloning. I feel like I learned so much from just such a short conversation with him. I want to take one of his classes at Stanford and actually get to learn more about cloning, because at first it was, as I said, like a kind of a downer about how much sci-fi got wrong about cloning. But really, there's so much room for creativity and awesome ways of thinking about how would you do different things. I mean, there's still the creep factor, of course, which is not necessarily something you can get around, but there was a lot more room for interesting sci-fi explorations, I felt.
Absolutely, especially since cloning has kind of, it's been in and out of popular media and popular culture. Him going back to telling us the story of Dolly, it was something that we kind of grew up with as this big cultural milestone, this thing that would change humanity forever, and kind of went nowhere. Mm-hmm. So it was really cool to see that the research, one, isn't stagnant, but really hasn't gone the way that people expected. It has gone in really interesting ways that have applications both here and potentially for space exploration.
Yes, very long-term space exploration, talking about generational ships or things of that nature, things of where you're worried about payload weight to space, and where you would actually want to send, you know, embryos and things of that nature, because they're lightweight and you could maybe do more with them in the future. Still pretty creeptastic, if you ask me, but ripe for exploring how that would work, and is there an ethical way you could ever do that?
And it makes me want to see more science fiction stories, one that may tackle the implications of cloning in that regard, of the more realistic portrayal, but also that if they want to take on that identity crisis theme, maybe go away from cloning, because it seems to be lots of other opportunities to talk about how you could tell that story without very explicitly saying that is a clone of another person. Cloning could be in ideas, personalities, and the nurture aspect.
Twins.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Really fun conversation, and thank Hank so much for coming by and giving us a little bit of a mini lecture on that. We'll have more conversations like that in the future. If you like this and you want to listen to Offworld as a podcast, you could always do that at tested.com/offworld or wherever you download your podcast. But we'll be back next time with another movie and topic. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you then.